Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Noah, and I am joined by...
Kayla.
And you know what? As I'm sitting here and as I'm pissed through the soul, and I am half agony and half hope as we start this episode.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Great start for the episode here.
Of course.
How are you? How's it going?
You know, pretty good. I'm on my last week of vacation, basically, or last few days of vacation. So I'm trying to soak it in as much as possible recording podcast stuff all day long.
Today, recording two today, because we're recording another one tonight. So a great way to end off the vacay.
Yeah, amazing.
It's the grind never stops in the capitalist system. So before we get into today's episode, which is just going to be about the new Persuasion adaption, and then because we like to talk about more than one thing sometimes, we're also just going to be talking in the second half of just like other Jane Austen adaptions. But before we do that, we have to get into last week's question of the week answers, which if you've never listened before, we ask a question at the end of every episode. And then we have people answer the question. And then at the beginning of the next episode, we read the answer. So the last week's episode was about Thor Love and Thunder. And a movie that was made. And we asked everyone if they liked Thor better pre-Ragnarok or post-Ragnarok. Because that's when like the split happens, you know, for his character.
Uh-huh.
If you want to skip this segment, you can just go to the timestamp in the description if you just want to get all into Persuasion, but if not, let's get into these answers here.
Yeah, let's. So we did a quick poll on Instagram, and it was 5-2. So post won by 5, and pre had 2, but Danny voted twice because he voted on his personal account and then the Film Is Lit podcast, which I'm assuming is him and not Laura. So, okay, so
trying to skew the ballot there a little bit.
Yeah.
Stop the polls. Stop the vote. Stop the count. That's what it is. It's been a while.
Yeah, I was trying to remember too.
I was just like, fake. It's been a long time.
It's fake. Wow. Fake stop the count. Votes. Yeah.
Never stop the count. What a time to be alive. So I think when we did our episode, I feel like this is kind of reflected too in what people said, but like it's kind of like in the middle because like I think his character was more consistent pre.
Yeah.
I probably would have picked post until Thor Love and Thunder.
Sure.
Because like I just didn't know where the character was going, but now seeing that it's kind of like been basically feels like a flip-flop, like it's not doesn't feel consistent. Now it feels like, I don't know, do I want to pick the consistent character that's boring or the non-consistent character that I sometimes like and sometimes it's just like I don't even know what he's thinking.
Sure.
So I mean, if I had to pick one, I'd probably say post. I think after thinking about it, just because like I like more movies from post, if you just like Infinity War and Endgame, I think him in those movies. So but let's see what everyone else said.
Yeah, so we've got some feedback here. Zach Smith said, I was disappointed by Love and Thunder, but he was the heart and soul of Infinity War. Which I think fits in with what we said before in our episode, is that he's very, like, he's not really a main character. Like, he definitely serves as a side character or, like, a supporting. And I think in that one definitely would be why he could be considered the heart and soul or kind of more of a character like that instead of being a leading man.
Right, yeah, because he only had the one thing to carry rather than the entire story.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially Infinity War. Like, I think Endgame is definitely different. But, like, it was nice at least he was different in those as well, you know, I think.
Sure.
But now with Thor and Love and Thunder, it feels, like, just inconsistent. But Yeah, Peter said, it's a trap. Ragnarok to Endgame was peak. Which, yeah, that's what we're saying, though. Because now we have another movie to consider. So, you know, it's complicated.
Yeah, it's so difficult.
The question is, pre or post? That's why it's so weird. Because Thor, Love, and Thunder, I think, why a lot of people don't like it, besides some of the tonal stuff, it just feels, like, inconsistent with his character. And, like, it, his character just doesn't make sense anymore. So that's why it's, like, throwing people off, I think. Because I agree, before this, I think it would have been an easy answer for me. Even if it's like, I don't love Ragnarok, I think it was an easier answer than it is now.
Yeah, and Mike had a similar answer here. He said post-Ragnarok, pre-Endgame was the sweet spot for him because he was not boring yet, still badass, and he wasn't treated like a complete idiot.
Right, right. Yeah, I think pretty much everyone feels the same, where it's like, it just feels like this last one was a bit of a falter.
And then Danny said, this is tough. Thor is a clueless and lovable gym bro. Really strikes a chord with me. He's great in Ragnarok, but cringe in Love and Thunder, but he's also a great comic relief in Infinity War. Ultimately, I think he's too dour and unlikable in everything pre-Ragnarok, so I gotta go post. Which is interesting, and I think could still fall under the same pretense that we've said, is that he doesn't work as a leading person, but everything where he's not leading, I think he works.
Well, and but then he did say he liked him in Ragnarok. So it's like, you know, sure. But I do think Ragnarok's a better movie. And I think you can do that thing one time where like he's kind of a clueless leading man, where I think that's what the joke was in Ragnarok. But I feel like once you repeat it in the second movie, then it starts to feel like dull, because it's like he's the same character almost Love and Thunder.
This may be not a super comparable comparison, I'm not really sure, but I feel like a recent himbo type character that worked that feels the same as this is in The Lost City with Channing Tatum.
Oh, great character.
But I feel like that's what Thor should have been, is like someone who does have those moments where like himbo moments, like the gym bro, whatever, like Danny said, where he's silly and funny and whatever, but also have moments of depth and have moments that aren't completely overpowered by the, like, himbo type character, I guess.
Yeah, I think two differences, too, because I think in Lost City, obviously, Channing Tatum's not the lead. I mean, you could say it's a dual lead, but I think Sandra Bullock is definitely carries more in the movie. And also, I think Channing Tatum, I think that character is a lot nicer, because I think in Thor Love and Thunder, Thor's kind of a jerk sometimes. Like he is. To be a true himbo, you kind of gotta like
be nice,
like, you know, Paul from Election, is that his name, Paul? That is the primary himbo text. And Thor was more just like, I don't know, he had a little like mean streak to him in this. I don't know, like it was a little too biting. Sure. Like he was too sarcastic, too on edge. I don't know, it's like they couldn't strike the balance there. So but I do get, like, that's what, if he was more like that character in Lost City, I think that would have worked better, because it's easier to like him even if he's clueless. But in this one, he's clueless, and like he's also sometimes kind of unlikable in this new movie. So yeah, that's all we got, though. Thank you, everyone, for writing in. And at the end of this episode, we'll have another question for everyone to answer. Not about Thor, though. So,
probably about Jane Austen.
Do you like Jane Austen more pre-Ragnarok or post-Ragnarok?
What's, like, the middle? What's one of the middle books she did? Emma? Do you like
pre-Emma,
pre-Emma
or post-Emma? Oh, my goodness. But yeah, let's get into this episode topic now. So we're going to first just talk about the new Persuasion adaption. So looking at this Letterboxd list, they laid this out pretty well, because like it has like all the movies listed in order, and it's got like whatever. So 2330, let's see what's on. So we've got, before this, it looks like two older Persuasion remakes or adaptions, which I watched one of them, the BBC one. Mm-hmm. From 1995. And then we also last year got a, or no, 2 years ago, got a movie called Modern Persuasion, which I guess is just Persuasion, but in present day. And then there was also, another BBC one in 1971. So this is technically the fifth time Persuasion has been made for the screen, either TV screen or movie screen. Which, at this point, there's been so many Jane Austen adaptions where it's like, I think all the books have been covered more than once or twice, you know? So you're never going to, like, get on something new. You just kind of got to wait till something gets a little too old, and then sure, they're going to make another one. But this one I do think is, like, one of her lesser known or talked about works, at least for, like, regular fans or, like, people that are, like, no Pride and Prejudice. They don't really talk about this one as much, so... It's interesting that this is the one Netflix decided to spring for.
Yeah, that is weird to me, too, because you would think that they would want to do something extremely popular and not, like, basically one of the least popular of the six.
Right, like the, it's like the indie pick, you know? Like, when you want to be cool and you're like, what's your favorite Jane Austen book? Like, oh, you know, Persuasion, you know, just, you know, a little one. You probably haven't heard of it.
Well, and, like, there's other ones that I feel like were due a new one. Like, I know that Northanger Abbey, like, the BBC one was in 2007. But I feel like we're due a new Northanger Abbey or, like, a new Mansfield Park.
Yeah, well, Northanger Abbey's only had three.
And so has Mansfield Park.
Yeah, and Modern Persuasion came out 2 years ago. People are still talking about Modern Persuasion. Remember that? Classic.
Yeah,
by Alex Appel and Jonathan Lisecki. Yeah, no. But yeah, you're right. There's other ones that I think I would have expected them to do if I had to, like, decide which one will they do. I think I would have thought they were going to do another one, but this is the one they picked. Do you want to read? Actually, you wrote this, so I'll read this quick synopsis about Persuasion.
Great. This is not one of my best, but.
Not doing a very good job of persuading me there, but we'll see. All right. It's been 8 years since Anne Elliot was persuaded by her family not to marry Frederick Wentworth due to his social status. But she can't stop thinking about the one who got away. After falling on poor financial times, Anne and her family moved to Bath so they can rent out Kenich Hall. Once in Bath, Anne's path collides with that of Wentworth, who is now of much better standing. Will she finally be united with Wentworth again, or will her broken heart and pent-up feelings be her downfall?
Womp womp.
Dramatic as usual, you know. Mm-hmm. You gotta keep the drama in these synopses. So this was her last novel. And this and Northanger Abbey were published together 6 months after she died. So this is like her send-off, I guess, which makes sense because it's, like, an older protagonist, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it works. And like I said, there's been multiple adaptions. And then, so, but, like, for the movie itself, this is the director, Carrie Cracknell? Yeah. This is her first film. So she'd previously done British theater since, like, 2002 with, like, Ruth Wilson, Jake Gyllenhaal, Vanessa Kirby. But she said she wanted, I read this in, like, an interview, that she said she wanted to direct a film next because she was, like, tired of how big the stage productions were getting because she was, I think, pretty famous in British theater. So, like, obviously, if you have Jake Gyllenhaal and Vanessa Kirby, you're, like, you're getting bigger productions. And she wanted to do something more intimate, which I don't feel like that's what this is. But, you know, I respect the sentiment.
I also feel like a lot of people who do film go back to theater because they want to do something more intimate. Like, I feel like theater is just naturally more intimate than film. And it's fair. Like, why didn't she just say, I want to do a scaled down production?
Yeah, like a really small venue. Like, you're rich enough. Yeah, that would make more sense to me because, like, I don't know really her theater. I don't know any of her plays, like, anything. So maybe she was doing, like, the blockbuster plays. Are they called something different? Just like the bigger plays, like, but you're right that I think it would be more intimate if she had just done a small play rather than a Netflix adaption with Dakota Johnson. Like, that doesn't seem like a very much more intimate, like, shot. Isn't it, like, shot on location too? It's shot on, like, some location, so, like,
well, because I think of, like, Jake Gyllenhaal did that, like, Jonathan Livingston play, and that was, like, a one-man show. And, like, I feel like that is extremely intimate compared to a film with a bunch of famous people in it that's, like, streaming on Netflix.
Yeah. I don't really understand the reason. Like, it sounds more like she just said that because she probably was asked something in the interview, like, why'd you decide to do that? And it sounds like it doesn't really track, I guess. But yeah. It's interesting that, you know, like whenever you have someone that was in theater, she was in like 20 years. So now to go to film for like pretty big movie, you know, big adaption, big stars to get this, pretty big deal. So I guess that's also was something going into this that I was like, this is a newer director too. So I was interested to see how that would play, I guess. So I guess we could just talk about the movie now. Going in, going into doing this episode, I had not seen any adaptions or read Persuasion at all. I didn't know the story. But I did watch the 1995 adept version, which I think is said to be the best version by most people. Maybe I don't know if the BBC series is said to be better, but I wasn't going to watch a whole series. The movie was not great, that the old one. I think it's true. I just don't really like the story, which is going to be a problem, I guess, with the new one too. Like, I just, sure. Not a great story in my opinion. As far as Jane Austen stories go, I think I like a lot of other ones better. But also just for that movie, especially like, cause you know how on like Amazon, they have like the fun facts. The first fun fact was like, this movie was all naturally lit. And it was one of those where, like, they probably shouldn't have said that as a fun fact, because, like, you can it's not a good thing that it's naturally lit. It looks terrible. It's, like, one of the worst, ugliest movies I've seen in a long time. So they probably should have used some lighting, is all I'm saying about that one. But that's, I guess, going into this new one. I didn't know the story because I watched that. But what about you? Did you, like, have any knowledge of the story going in?
A little bit. I haven't read Persuasion apart from excerpts of it. Like, I've read small excerpts of different like portions, but I haven't read through the whole entire like story, but I was familiar with the story. I think going in, I had pretty low expectations.
I feel like it was 2 months ago. There was like early reviews I saw that were saying like how bad it was, or maybe it was when the trailer came out. Like, the trailer was so bad.
Yeah, the early reviews were really bad. The trailer, like, launched a full-on, I don't know, hate fest, which I think is fair, because I think the trailer was, like, horrendous. Like, just not a good trailer in general, whether or not it was for a Jane Austen adaptation, and then people were hearing some of the lines, and it's like, but it was hard to tell at that point, too, like, how bad it would actually be. Because it's like, a trailer could be anything, you know?
Yeah, because they don't always make the trailers, the filmmakers.
Yeah, like, it might not actually, like, the movie might be better. Might be. And then, like, I was ready to give it the benefit of the doubt. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be great by any means. But I was like, oh, well, I don't know. We'll see, like, once it comes out. But, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this. But, like, we're not going to spend a ton of time on it, because it's really not, like, there's a lot to talk about, but it's not, is it all really worth talking about?
No.
Not really. But yeah, it's just not a good adaption. It's trying to do like a lot of things at once, because it is a period piece. Well, because it's set in, we'll talk about this in the second half, but there's like different types of Jane Austen movies where like, depending on where they're set, but like this is like a direct adaption of the book where it's like the same setting, year, everything. So it is like a period piece like that, but then it's also trying to modernize a lot of things. Like, for instance, I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know, so there's like a lot of fourth wall breaking, like in more modern, I guess, romantic comedy kind of things.
Sure.
More romantic comedy tropes like there's one where it's like she said that he makes her a playlist and then she holds up like a stack of sheet music. But she says playlist, I'm pretty sure. And like she talks about like how she's thriving and how she never trusts tens. And so there's like, it's trying to do a more modern spin, but still set in the past. So that's the first kind of like jarring tonal thing. There's a lot of jarring tonal things, but that's like the first thing that sticks out where like it doesn't really mesh very well, those two things.
Well, which is so funny because she said in an interview, this was in regards to the trailer, so the backlash to the trailer. The trailer focuses much more on the comedic quality of the film rather than the more mature, melancholic elements. Some people for whom the book is their favorite didn't necessarily see that represented. I hope when they watch the film that they'll enjoy that tonal balance.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not really a balance. Because I do think that is it. I guess I can see that the melancholy stuff is there. But, like, I think the key word, like, is balance. Like, it doesn't really feel balanced because it's, like, it's comedic. And then it's, like, goes to this really dramatic music with, like, these long sweeping shots. And it's, like, it doesn't feel like it mixes together at all. They're, like, one for the comedy and one for the Twitter threads and the Twitter memes. And now one for the Austin heads. And, like, they're trying to, like, again, have it all the ways rather than picking a lane.
Yeah, I agree. I think it just feels very like they had to Google modern slang and be some modern slang that we can use in this movie, and it just comes across as so poorly written and like it feels like she's 42, I think. I looked it up today. It feels like a 42-year-old trying to write a young person's movie. Like, it doesn't feel like a young writer wrote it, because she wrote all that, or did in an interview with the New York Times. It was like, oh, this is for a new audience to like come to Jane Austen. And I was like, girl, she's literally one of the most popular authors of all time. Like, I would say she's probably in the top five of like most famous authors of all time. And most renowned.
And her books are still getting like read in high school because they're required. So it's not like people aren't reading them anymore.
Right. Like, and like
they're still getting read by everyone.
The 2005 Pride and Prejudice is extremely popular, like still. And there's other adaptations that are popular, like Bridget Jones and like Fire Island was just made. And people were like, oh my gosh, it's Pride and Prejudice. And so, like, people love this stuff. And I just cannot comprehend how she's so out of touch with everything that she was like, oh, young people don't know anything about Jane Austen. Let's teach them who Jane Austen is. But let's do it with Gen Z slang so that they'll actually receive the content. And it's like, no, if you make the content as it's supposed to be, like, people will receive it as it is. And, like, young people love period stuff.
Bridgerton like just like the biggest show like last year?
Yeah, it's the biggest after Stranger Things, I think.
Come on.
I don't know. I've never seen Bridgerton, so I can't speak to like how modern fitting it is, like the tonally. But like people like period stuff. Or you look at something like Downton Abbey. I mean, so many people love
Downton
Abbey.
The movie just came out.
They're still making movies. People are still going and seeing the movies. And it's not just, like, old women that love Downton Abbey. Like, me and all my homies love Downton Abbey. And so it's, like... this whole thing just strikes me as an out-of-touch white woman trying to make something that's relevant and not understanding anything about viewership and the audience. Like, she just... I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's read this translation example I have here, which I'm not going to say this is every line, because I think that's another issue where, like, some of the lines are, like, modern slang, and then some of the lines are ripped from the book, which is another, like, what is happening with this dialogue? But this is an example of a passage from the book, and then what it was translated to in the movie. So I'm going to read the book, and then you're going to read what they rewrote it as. So in the book it is... and this is, so the one difference is the book is in third person and the movie's in first person. So that's an obvious difference too. So
sure.
Now they were as strangers, nay, worse than strangers, for they could never become acquainted. And then what did they adapt that as?
Now we're worse than exes. We're friends. Yikes.
Man. L. Truly a downgrade that if I've ever seen one. And that's like I said, that's not all the dialogue, but in some ways it's worse that that's not all the dialogue. Cause then when they have that ending speech, like the classic Jane Austen, like monologue at the end where like you hear the guy's long monologue or through her, cause it's a letter. It's like, that feels so out of place though, because it's like you had all of these other jokes, but then you have this, which feels like then it then now it is back and grounded in the 1800s whenever. Yeah, so it's just that's the main thing, is just the tonal stuff. But beyond that, it is just a very, I mean, maybe this isn't maybe even the movie's fault. They maybe could have done a better job making it more interesting. But I do think that this is just not as interesting of a story as other Jane Austen stories.
Yeah.
It deals a lot less in the class stuff, which in that case, maybe they should have just brought it to present day, because then it would have been easier to adapt to present day, because it's literally just the relationship drama. But yeah, it's not, I just don't think the story is as interesting. So that was the other thing. I was just kind of bored through most of the movie, and it looks boring.
And one thing that I'll say, I posted like a Twitter thread, and two of my friends who have read the book were commenting on it. And they were saying that, like, for one, the writer really like misunderstood the source material. Like, it feels like she didn't even read the novel at all, like when writing this movie. And one thing one of my friends Jess said is that Anne is not the narrator of the book. Jane Austen is. So the narrator is a witty kind of, is telling you the story in a certain way, but the character of Anne is not that way at all.
Interesting.
And yeah. So it feels to me like maybe this author, like, or the writer, the maker of the film, totally misunderstood, like, the character in the book.
Interesting, yeah. Well, are any Jane Austen books first person? Aren't they all third person, I'm pretty sure?
I think so.
I think most of them are, like, so it's like, that's interesting that if she is a Jane Austen fan, that, like, she didn't know that, or whoever wrote it. I don't think she wrote it, actually, so I don't know who wrote the script, but...
Yeah, I don't know, but either way, it's like...
No, yeah, you're right.
I don't know, it's very strange all around, and I think, like...
All around,
the movie as a whole, like, which we talked about, the casting choices are very strange.
Awful casting. Well, no, I'm not gonna say, because, like, she's a good actress, I like her acting... But you gotta also consider type a little bit, and like who the character is. So you can't just cast like
the next, you can't cast the biggest star in the role.
Yeah. Because Anne is supposed, for those uninitiated into the Persuasion fandom, she's not supposed to be like Emma, who Emma, I think, is like supposed to be the prettiest person in the book. Or most of her characters are supposed to be like very good looking. But they describe her in the movie too as like obviously like the person that no one really cares about and like the least pretty of the three sisters. Like, that's kind of her point of her character, is she's like an older protagonist who isn't married, and they cast Dakota Johnson, who is like the prettiest person in the whole movie, like,
yeah,
and way more than the guy, let me tell you. If they could have like the guy and her could have like just swapped like just overall attractiveness, it would have worked, because I don't know why they cast him.
Yeah, he was so ugly. Sorry, and he also was just not good. And so it was really hard for me to understand why she was like, why Dakota Johnson was like in love with this guy for 8 years when he literally,
and why no one else
like,
was in love with her,
a
too.
Literal plank of wood. Like, he was so boring, and every time he was there, I was like, just stop talking. Like, I don't like you. And I didn't realize that I thought that Henry Golding was the person she was supposed to be with.
Bummer. Like, she did have chemistry with Henry Golding.
It started and I saw they said Wentworth and then it showed him and I was like, wait, I thought he was the ugly cousin. like what? I was so confused. And then I was really disappointed, because then in the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh crap, I have to watch her like fall in love with this guy.
Because you gotta want the main characters to want to get together. That's like that's a crucial point of the rom-com.
Yeah, and I can excuse casting if they have good chemistry. Like,
they have awful chemistry.
They can make me like them despite
boring.
And they were so boring. And then Henry Golding comes in and she has like all this chemistry with him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is just, I don't know. I just think it's very bad casting.
In the interview too, she was like, oh man, they had great chemistry. We did a Zoom screen test. I was like, maybe that's why you thought they had good chemistry, because you tested them on Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, I could have good chemistry with anyone I wanted on Zoom, but like
Zoom? What are you talking about?
When you're in person?
Well, maybe she saw the sideburns. Like, she wasn't ready for the sideburns, and then she was like, wow, this is going to be hard.
Yeah, I think just overall, it's just a very, like, disappointing, because I like Jane Austen, and so I'm excited to receive any new Austen adaptations of things, and I just feel like this is a big letdown, and then there's talks of two other ones coming to Netflix, too. Similarly, I don't remember where I read that.
Well, I think I mean, I sent if they're the real ones, I'd be excited, but are they the same style?
That was my understanding, is that they're in talks to bring, which I would hope that Netflix would have enough mind to be like, oh yeah, people hated this, so maybe we should not do them that way.
Well, I hope that, that's what they would think, and not just like, oh, maybe people don't like Jane Austen anymore. Maybe we should not make these anymore.
Yeah.
Like, know the tone as well.
Or maybe some other studio should make them and not Netflix.
Yeah, that also could work. Because this movie also just looks so, like, it looks like the classic Netflix,
I mean, like, yeah, it looks exactly like a Netflix film. It reminded me a lot of Enola Holmes, because that does a similar fourth wall break, but it also looks cinematically very similar, just because that is a very Netflix original movie in the way that it's shot, in the way the color tones are edited, the contrast is a little bit heavier, so I don't know.
Well, this was a disappointing one, but if we're going to go to a quick break, and then when we come back, we can talk about some non-disappointing Jane Austen adaptations.
Some good ones.
Which will maybe be a good palate cleanser.
Please. Back.
All right, we're no more persuasion talk. Leave that probably please. The last time I ever think about that movie.
Yeah, let's move
thank
on.
Thank goodness. No, we're gonna talk about just like other Jane Austen adaptions now, which are interesting to talk about because it's like different than like I guess a regular book adaptation. Like, because she just has so many popular books, and there's so many different ways her stories get adapted to because they're like so popular now that they've almost become like some of them like more fables where it's like you'll take the trope and use it in your story, but it's not a direct adaptation. Like there's just a lot of different ideas and ways to adapt her stories. Would you want to start here? Like, what is your history with these adaptions? Because I know you're a big fan now, but were you always a fan?
Sure. So my brother did theater, and I got into theater after he did theater. So he was in our theater troupe, like, because he's 5 years older than I am. So he was in our theater troupe, like, before I was. And the first play that he did was Emma. And they needed more, like, guys in theater, which is pretty common. And so he got into the troupe because they needed male characters. So that was in 2008, and he played Mr. Elton. And so I remember we watched one of the movies, one of the versions of Emma, and then went and saw him in the play. So that was kind of my first introduction to a Jane Austen story. And then obviously have either watched a couple throughout the years, like Sense and Sensibility, have been very familiar with the stories, I read Pride and Prejudice in high school. So, like, I like Jane Austen. And now I'm like, I love Jane Austen. So, just my love grows exceedingly.
That sounds like you're writing your own story there.
Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I'm the next Jane Austen.
Wow, can you imagine what a... What a origin story for you. Okay. So I guess, my first experience was with Emma too. I think mostly that's like a very popular first one, I guess, because it's like,
sure,
she's a younger character, maybe. And she's more, I don't know. That just seems like the one that people always pick. So I read that actually twice because I don't know why I read it twice, but they were both times were for school. So there you go. And then I'd also, like, over the years, I'd seen some of the BBC stuff, and I've seen, like, watched a few, actually, probably, like, I probably doubled the amount of ones I'd seen this last week, you know, because I watched a few this last week. So now I've kind of like doubled that. It was like, because in the past, I like, it's not that I didn't like them. I just didn't like seek them out, I guess.
Sure.
But I did seek more out this week. So now I've kind of like got a little bit more knowledge going in here, which is great. So I tried to kind of break it into three categories, the types of Jane Austen movies, which is the second and third one are kind of like, it's hard. There's like a thin line between them. So the first one is just the regular period piece, which is this a direct adaptation, right? So that's like Persuasion or Pride and Prejudice, both the miniseries and the 2005, I guess. And then the second one, I think, is the modernization. So that's bringing it to the present day, which this is where it's hard, because the third one I wrote was inspired by Jane Austen stories. So sometimes it's hard to tell, though, like, what can you count as an adaptation, like a modernization, and what is just, like, inspired by the trope and not, like, isn't a... Because I think, like, we just said, we recently just mentioned Fire Island, which I think is more inspired and less a full-on Pride and Prejudice adaptation, you know?
Sure.
And I think even, actually, Fire Island, I think, like, takes elements from, like, Emma, too, and, like, other Jane Austen elements. So I think that is maybe, but sometimes it's hard, because, like, is Bridget Jones' Diary a Pride and Prejudice movie, or is it just inspired by the idea of, like, the uptight guy and the guy that is cool, but the, like, you know, like, it's hard to tell sometimes, because that's how integrated her stories are now into rom-coms, I guess.
Yeah, like, is Hallmark's Pride, Prejudice, and Mistletoe an adaptation or an inspiration?
Yeah, right. Well, and I mean, like, a movie like Austen Land is definitely a inspired, because that's not, and like, even a movie like Metropolitan from 1990 is inspired, like, and those are less, those are more just like inspired by her or inspired by her work. But sometimes it's hard, like I said, like, to define what is or isn't a modernization or not. Like, what about Clueless? I would think Clueless is an Emma adaption more than an inspired, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would agree. It's been a while since I've seen Clueless, but from what I remember, I think I would agree.
Yeah, because it's like, I think to be an adaption, it's got to bring almost all the elements of the book with it, rather than just like the core of the book, I guess, you know, where Clueless brings like the friend Harriet, I think, is in the book. I don't know what her, the in Clueless, what she's named, but like the friend element and then her rich father, like there's it, Clueless brings a lot of the elements rather than just like her being like a matchmaker, which I guess it could be in other stories. There's a matchmaker who falls in love, but that couldn't be like, that's not just an Emma story.
Yeah.
What are your favorite types though? Like, what would you, if you could only have one, what do you like best?
Like between the period piece and a modernized.
Period piece or modern? Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I would probably pick period piece, just because I think like that's a very separate genre where there aren't a whole lot of, like, there's plenty of modern movies of things.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And so I would rather, like, separate from that and have something a little more unique by, like, leaning into a period piece or watching something that's, like, different.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of, like, not really even, like, a fair question, because you couldn't have the modernizations without the period pieces. I guess more of the question is, like, what do you prefer watching? Which, I think even then I would prefer watching period pieces, because it's like the goal of the modernization, I guess, is to show how relevant her stories are still, you know, I guess is like the, because I think that's can be an interesting like effect where like you watch Fire Island and it's like this is a completely different like set of characters and like world they live in, but it is like the same dynamic. So it's like it shows like how those dynamics that she wrote about are still so true, even in like a completely different setting. But I think you can do that in a period piece. I think, because, well, there was Emma from 2020, And I also think you watched recently, and I watched recently, the Northanger Abbey from 2007. And I think both of those movies are actually, like, do what Persuasion kind of wanted to do, which was to modernize the period piece, but they do it in a way that's, like, you can tell it was made more recently than, I guess, like, the 1995 Persuasion, Pride and Prejudice, or Persuasion, because they both came out in 1995. But they still ground it in the period. So, like, I still think you can speak to, like, the modernness of the stories without having to bring them to now. I think that's a thing. Like, it's like a magic trick to, like, figure out how to make the stories feel modern but not take you out of the period. I think that's, like, the best way to do a modernization, I guess, is to do that.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely something that both of those movies did. I watched Emma for the first, that adaptation of Emma for the first time yesterday. Mm. For some reason, I just never gotten around to it. And I thought that for sure, that it definitely felt like it was made now, but, like, somehow it retained all the elements of the period without it being, like, too forcefully brought to now. Where I think with, like, the newer Persuasion, it's very clear that the movie was, like, trying to be now. Like, I feel like those other ones just feel so much more effortless. Like, it doesn't pull you out of the story, that they're slightly more, like, modernized.
Yeah. And I think even 2005 Pride and Prejudice is like that, too.
Sure.
Like, I think that feels similar. And it maybe is even, like, in the filmmaking style, you know, they can infuse the modern feeling with, like, the way the movie looks and, like, feels, but it still feels more classic, I guess, where, like we said, the new Persuasion definitely just feels like a Netflix movie and not like a Jane Austen movie, where, like, they have a certain look, I think, a lot of times, or feel.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites, though? Like, we don't have to do, like, a ranking, but, like, maybe, like, your desert island picks.
I mean, Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 version, I watch often on repeat. I think Pride and Prejudice is just my favorite story in general out of her books. Probably just because I know it, I'm most familiar with it. Like, so I would say that one. I really liked Northanger Abbey.
I did too. That one was awesome. I don't know why people don't talk about that one.
I know. I was thinking that too. Like, because it came out after Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. It's short. Like, it was only like Felicity 90 Jones, minutes.
Carrie Mulligan. Like, it's got stars in it. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, and it's definitely, like, it has the same vibes as Pride and Prejudice. Like, a lot of the, like, yearning that people love. Kind of a bit of a slow burn, maybe not as much in Pride and Prejudice just because it's a shorter movie. But I feel like it hits all the same beats that Pride and Prejudice does. So it's surprising to me that people don't talk about this one more, because I almost feel like Tilney is a better protagonist than, or a better, like, male character than Darcy is. And so it's funny that it's not talked about as much, because it's like, I don't know. I just feel like in some ways it is better than Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, I think it feels more believable at points than Pride and Prejudice. Definitely feels like rom-com,
sure.
Like, logic sometimes, where I think this one definitely feels, I think, a more realistic character arc for the main character. I think too, like, I think if they put this one on, like, Netflix and put it on the front page with, like, a nice picture. You know, they always have to pick, like, a picture to make it look cool. Like, I think if they promoted it, I think they could give it, like, a new life for sure. Like, if they just marketed this as, like, a Jane Austen movie, I'm sure so many people haven't seen it and they would just be introduced to the story. And it feels like, even as 2007, I think it feels pretty contemporary to now, even though it's 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I think I like her character better in this. Like, she feels more relatable than in Pride and Prejudice. Like, I felt like as I was watching Felicity Jones as Catherine, it was like, oh my gosh, everything she did where she's like crying over this thing of being like, oh, I made a terrible mistake and now he's never gonna love me because I made a mistake. I'm like, oh my gosh, why does that feel so much more relatable? I guess is kind of what my, like, I just feel like it's a little bit more, I don't know, than Elizabeth and Darcy. And like, Elizabeth and Darcy feels more like a fantasy story in Pride and Prejudice. Like, it doesn't feel like you're ever going to be in that story. Like, it just feels like I'm watching the story of other people. But I feel like with Northanger, you can be like, you can put yourself in that story. Like, where there's another guy who's, like, trying to manipulate you, and, like, things are misconstrued, and you're like, no. Like, it just feels more modernized in that way. Like, it feels more like something that could actually happen, I guess.
Yeah, and well, like I said, they were, that one and Persuasion were written and released together, so they're like her final books. And I think in both of those, they definitely feel, even though I don't love Persuasion, I think they feel the most realistic of any of the stories that I've like watched or read or whatever. I think like they feel very like seasoned, like she knows how to write realistic characters at this point. And not like Pride and Prejudice is bad, it's just like you said, a lot more fantastical. Yeah, I think even like last night, I watched both Bridget Jones and Fire Island this last week, and both times I was watching those, I definitely even got that feeling where it's like, it feels more just like it feels a lot more like a movie where it's like, oh, I see this character, I'm like, oh, okay, this is the guy that I have to watch get with her, you know, and like, I just, or him in Fire Island, and I just know, like, it feels a lot more planned out, a lot more like stepped, like, oh, now this happens, and they get a little bit closer, and, but it doesn't feel ever like, I don't know, like I'm watching a real story where these people are actually coming together, where I think both North and Drabby and Persuasion feel like actual like love stories that could happen, where it's like how people actually fall in love rather than like the enemies to lovers thing that happens in a week. Yeah, it just feels more realistic to me, but you know, maybe I just don't know anything.
Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe I'm just lost. But yeah, I think most people would agree. Like, most people would pick Pride and Prejudice as like one that they would watch forever, you know, either 2005 or 1995. Those are like the main two people would pick. Even though there are 20 on this list. So it's like, this has been made 20 times, this movie. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely the most popular.
Yeah, yeah. But I think like Sense and Sensibility people would pick too. That was a big one. Again, 1995 was like, I guess, the year, I think most people say, is like the revival year. That's when a lot of big stuff came out. So people would pick the 1995 Sense and Sensibility, I think, as a staple. And then I think, I don't know, because I know a lot of people picked Gwyneth Paltrow's Emma because like, I think it's just like the biggest one. But I think now people would pick the newer one out of that story.
Yeah, I think I would agree.
And those are like the three biggest ones, I would think. And then like you have Clueless and stuff, which people love Clueless. I guess the other thing we can ask too, do you prefer, like if you had to pick one, this is, you could pick one, the feature length or the miniseries length? Because that's also a big talking point, I think. There's like the people who are only watch the miniseries, and there's people that are like the movies better, I guess. I think the movie people are definitely, I think it's, there's definitely just more elitist this miniseries people, because they're like,
sure,
this is like the book.
Yeah, I think it's as long as the movie is still an accurate adaptation, I don't really care. Obviously, a movie is going to be quicker. Like, I can rewatch Pride and Prejudice, the movie, multiple times. And then it's like, but if you're going to sit down and watch the miniseries, obviously that's a much bigger undertaking, even if it is a little bit more book accurate, because they have more like time and space to make it more book accurate. But I think, I don't know, it's easy to be like, oh, I want it to be like the book as much as possible. And it's easy for that to take place. And I think that's a fair like assumption, like if that's what the content you want to get out of it. But I don't think that the movies, at least the bigger ones, are like bad adaptations of the books, if that makes sense. Like, I think they're still good adaptations, just in a different sort of format.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing about these ones is that a lot of her books don't really, because I think with adaptations, it's like your first thing you cut is the side plots. If you want to like take a big book and just do the main story. But a lot of her books aren't really a lot of side plots. It's more just like, they're really long developed relationships, most of them, you know, And so I think with like Pride and Prejudice, like if you know how developed their relationship is in the book, or I guess in the miniseries, then maybe when you then watch a movie, it feels more rushed because you know how much development went into it previously in the original text, I guess. So I think that's the one thing where it's like, it's not like they're always cutting side plots. Sometimes they just have to find a way to speed up the development because they don't have 6 hours. They only have 2 hours. So I think it just depends like on the pace of the movie that you have to really be careful, like that you're pacing it enough where it feels natural, because her books are so like densely developed where it's like, you have to have every step for the relationship to make sense.
Yeah.
So I it's one of the ones that I do understand more, like the book purist, or I guess minis, because people love the miniseries. So it's like they just want all of the development so they can fully enjoy the moment when they embrace in the final scene.
Of course.
You know, it's all about the final scene. It's how are we building to the final moment? And it's all about that momentum.
Yeah.
But yeah, going forward, I'm interested, I guess, to see if they make those other Netflix ones and if they're like this newer one, because that would suck.
Yeah, it would be very unfortunate.
Well, when was the last one? Like, I mean, I guess Fire Island, like you said, but like, when was the last, like, before Persuasion, there hasn't been a lot of more recent, like, but after the book, like, adaptions, like Sense and Sensibility or...
Yeah, I mean, apart from Emma... I think everything else was like 2008, 2007.
Mm.
So it's been a long time.
So there's a lot of movies, like you said, that are due, or books that are due for like re-adaptation. So I'm just hoping that we don't waste this next, because there's like, I feel like maybe it's like every 15 years, there's another
resurgence,
set of adaptions.
Yeah.
So I don't want to waste this next set of adaptions on this crappy Netflix formula.
Sure.
You know? Then we have to wait another 15 years till we get actually good adaptions again. Like, imagine if they made Pride and Prejudice in that style. That would be such a bummer.
Oh my gosh.
Like, at least it was Persuasion, which, like, I feel like only some people care about. But, like, if they did a really beloved, like, one, that would be rough.
Yeah, I could see it going very poorly for them.
Yeah, and then we don't get another Pride and Prejudice for 15 years, and we have to live with this one with, it's Noah Centineo, maybe.
Oh my,
as Darcy.
God, I would. That would be it for me. I think I would die. Like, I literally don't think I would be able to survive that. Honestly.
Oh, man,
that'd be my worst nightmare come true. I could not imagine a worse person to play Mr. Darcy.
The Noah Centineo.
Yeah, that was like, that's my breaking point right there. Even just the thought of it is like killing me.
Oh my gosh. It is.
Especially, maybe... I think the thought of it kills me because it could happen. Like, that's what scares me.
I feel like
me.
That would be a def. Because he can definitely play standoffish, because.
He could play Mr. Wickham.
Because you're not. Well, he can play anyone I'm not supposed to like.
Yeah, like, I think
he actually, in Persuasion, would have maybe been better than Henry Golding, because Henry Golding I like, and so it's like,
yeah,
when she doesn't get with him, I'm like,
great,
dang,
point.
That sucks. But if that was Noah Centineo is like a little snake like, you know, that, I mean, with Persuasion, yeah, it's just casting a lot of that. Without, I mean, besides the tone stuff, I think that would have helped too. Maybe get him in the bad guy role.
Or here's what we do: we have Nicholas Braun play Darcy, so it's just like.
I feel like Nicholas Braun is not mean enough.
No, he
like,
could play Bingley.
Like, yeah, Nicholas Braun in a Jane Austen movie though would be awesome. Like, that would actually be sick.
I could see him as Bingley in Pride and Prejudice. Actually,
man, is that should be our question? Like, cast the next Pride and Prejudice remake.
I mean, I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of someone who I think would be a good Mr. Darcy. Robert Pattinson.
Well, it's got to be younger, you know, because if we're casting like Nicholas Braun, like it's got to be like 35 or like 30 or lower, like in that range, you know, because
yeah.
I think that's what people would want anyway.
Yeah, low 30s is kind of what I'm thinking.
Ryan Reynolds.
He's too old.
I know. I'm just saying Netflix, you know, they love Ryan Reynolds. They got that. Maybe Sean Levy can direct it in their Ryan Reynolds run of movies. Free Guy and Pride and Prejudice double feature.
Logan Lerman could be decent.
Yeah, well, just got to be someone that can play Stan, because like I think your first inclination would be like someone like Tom Holland or Timothy Chalamet, because they're like the heartthrobs. Mm-hmm. But you got to cast someone that's a little more unconventional.
Yeah, because they would be better as like Bingley.
Yeah, you can't cast the first choice, because Darcy has to be like the not as obvious choice in the beginning.
Mike Faced. Mm. He could be in it.
He could be in it. I don't know if he could be Darcy.
Yeah, I feel like Darcy is such a hard, like...
Because I feel like Matthew McFadden is, like, in 2005, is the unconventional choice in that movie.
And I think it needs to be someone who's a little less, not as popular. Like, someone who's on the brink of popularity, but isn't, like, extremely popular.
Maybe that should be our question. Who would you cast as Mr. Darcy in the next Pride and Prejudice adaption? I would like to hear some people's answers, because this, I'm going to be thinking about this now today, you know?
I think Miles Teller would be a fan cast for sure, like if you opened it up to a large group of people.
Well, especially right now, yeah, for sure. But yeah, let us know. Yeah, who would you cast as Mr. Darcy? And really give us some thought, you know? Yeah, don't go like the Timothy Chalamet route where it's like the first white guy you think of. Think a little bit outside the box.
Yeah. Let us know. Like, not an A-list. Like, I feel like they need to be, like, a B or C-list actor.
Man, you know what would have actually been a huge L? If they had made this movie, like, in 2018, you know who would have been cast as Mr. Darcy?
Who?
Armie Hammer.
Oh, my God. He probably would have.
That would be the first casting choice right there. Right out of Call Me By Your Name.
I feel like he would get cast as Wickham.
I don't know. He's just so stoic a lot of times, I feel like.
I don't know.
I just feel like that would be... And that would have tainted it even more. So we kind of dodged a bullet. So let's see
maybe,
who's going to be next.
Maybe other people will give us some good ideas here.
Yeah. Preferably, yeah, not a cannibal for the role would be
ideal.
Would be my only answer.
Not a rapist either.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of no's. And speaking of no's... Our next episode is going to be a review of Nope.
Great.
Good joke. So
yeah,
get ready
be
for
exciting.
That one. Daniel Kaluuya, he could be Darcy. He can play that.
Okay, I could see him as Darcy.
See, he can play the more stoic and standoffish at first, I feel like.
I could see that for sure. I think that would be a good casting.
So yeah, maybe that will be his follow up to Nope. So yeah, but that's what we'll be reviewing next week, which I'm excited for it. I'm gonna try to rewatch at least Us, because I only have seen that the one time in the theater. So I want to maybe try rewatching that this week. So we'll see if I can get around to that. But cool. I'm excited for it.
Yeah,
looks good. Trailer looks fun.
Yeah, I'm excited. It should be a good time.
Yeah, and that's what we will read the answers to the question. So get those answers in. We'll read them on that episode. You can answer that on all our social medias, our website, Spotify. All the stuff is below in the show notes. So just go answer that question, and then we'll read your answer to whoever you want to be Darcy.
Great.
Yeah. Anything until then?
No. I think I've exhausted my brain here.
You know, that's relatable. So, yeah, thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm half agony.
Oh, my God. And I'm Kayla.
Wow. All right. Bummer. And we're...
And we're...
Your secondhand film critics.